Hi, I'm George Flynn, and today we're in depth with Ann Strong. Ann has been a player in Tennessee politics for years now, and she's met a lot of candidates, and she's been a candidate and in both parties. So she has a unique perspective about politics today. Ann's worked in the healthcare industry, and she lives in Crockett County in Tennessee. Ann, thank you for being here, and
My
we just
pleasure.
Really appreciate
My
you.
My pleasure.
Being here. Tell us a little bit about yourself and where you come from, your background, and just go ahead with how you got in the healthcare industry, but start with where you were born and everything.
I was born in Crockett County. My dad was the sheriff in Crockett County. He was the Buford Plusser of Crockett County, so to speak. Then I went to work later in life for the Bank of Alamo, Urban Drug. I was the first woman ever elected to an office as Register of Deeds, and the only one ever reelected.
Okay. So you were
I was there
elected.
8 years, twice.
Okay. What year
terms.
Was that?
78 through 86.
Okay.
And then I got beat, so I dusted myself off and picked me up, and I talked to Mr. Jim Ayers' group, which I think he walks on water. Went to work for the nursing home group, and Jerry Ivey was the president. He created a position for me. I was the recruiter, staffer, marketer, and legislative liaison for 31 nursing homes for 25 years.
Oh, okay. So you figured that job out.
I figured that job out. Hey, they had me trained perfect. And they were so dedicated to taking care of the elderly. Made my heart smile every day that I went to work for them.
Well, that is great. When you ran as Register of Deeds, did they have partisan elections?
Oh, Crockett County was only Democrat.
So it was the only Democrat back then?
It was only Democrat back then. I used to be a Democrat.
That's what I hear, and you've got this unique perspective that you've supported Democrats and Republicans. As a matter of fact, you've been a Democrat
all my
and
life
a Republican.
Up until.
Are you, and you even maybe an independent?
No.
Which are you now, and how?
I am a strong Republican conservative. I believe in the rules that Donald Trump has put forth. He was so easy for me to work for when he come down the escalator. He was saying exactly what we were saying around our kitchen tables. He believed in your law and order. He believed in our border security. He believed in justices, and he believed in stopping people from having partial birth abortions, because I just can't go there.
Okay,
and like I said, the Democrats had gotten to be so liberal.
But you were a Democrat.
Oh, I was a hardcore Democrat.
And then you
Democrat.
Became a Republican. Well, what was this watershed event? What happened to change your mind?
I was a Hillary Clinton delegate elected. I went to Colorado in 2008. I went through the convention, and when Hillary Clinton got beat, this
no,
great...
Wait a minute. You were a Hillary Clinton delegate.
Okay. At the convention.
So you were hardcore.
I was hardcore. You know, I saw Bill Clinton at an event for Harold Ford in Nashville. A lady there that owned health care in Lebanon, Dixie Taylor, paid $5,000 for me to go see him. And then Craig Lehman, friend of mine, he knew I wanted to go so bad, and my mom was with me. He paid for her ticket to get in up there. But as life events change, I went to Colorado. I was the delegate. I did the voting. I saw the hustle out there. And you know how conventions are. You may not elect the best person sometimes.
Okay.
So I was so disappointed that they didn't elect her. At the time, I thought she was fairly honest. I found out later, you know, you can be wrong about people. And I was definitely wrong about people. About her, for sure. But the night that they elected Obama, this great big guy behind me stood up, and he said, "Now, we're going to tell you what to do." I come home, I call Mr. Paul Richardson.
So this was 2008?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was on the election commission as a Democrat.
As a Democrat.
I come home, and I call Mr. Paul Richardson and Mr. Royce Austin. Democrats. Republican. They were Republicans. I've told them I was getting off the election commission. I wasn't going to be a Democrat anymore. And, you know, our Republican Party in Crockett County, 15 years ago, you could fit them in a telephone booth. So they told me they'd welcome me aboard, and they did. But then when I started working for the Republican Party, we've gained steam in Crockett County. I wound up being the 8th Congressional District Coordinator with John Yearwood. Mm-hmm. Now, Terry Rowland had West Tennessee,
right.
But we were the coordinators for the 8th Congressional District. We did 74 point something percent, maybe 2 or 3% for Donald Trump.
This is Donald Trump?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's a big difference from a rural West Tennessee Democrat county. They saw the light too.
Okay. And so you became a Republican.
Hardcore.
Okay. And
I'm a conservative. I believe you're supposed to get up and go to work every morning.
Right.
Not, you don't help anybody but giving them a paycheck.
Well, you might not have to go to work every morning because I remember something about an Ann Strong winning the lottery.
Well,
is that right?
That's true, Doc.
Okay, now let's hear about that. When did you win the lottery?
Miss Rebecca Paul called me one afternoon at my home. And, you know, I don't believe every phone call.
Were you buying lottery tickets?
Uh-huh. I bought $20 worth of lottery tickets every month. That was for my mom to scratch off. My mom was sick for about 20-something years.
Right.
And that was her pastime. I'd give her the tickets and she'd scratch them off. Okay, she scratched it off and it said, fill it out. And I thought, now, not only did I buy a ticket, I got to go fool with filling this thing out. So I filled it out. Then Rebecca Paul, who's head of your lottery in Tennessee, called me. And she said, Ann, this is Rebecca Paul. You've got a chance to win $10,000, $25,000, or a million. I said, sure. She said, no, this is Rebecca Paul. I said, okay. She said, would you come to Memphis? And I told her I would. Then I hung up the phone and called her back. Sure enough, it was Rebecca Paul. Came to Memphis and we did a like a Wheel of Fortune spin type thing. And first walk through, I won $1 million in the time I played the game. So that afternoon, I knew I had not a snowball's chance because you can't do that twice.
Wait a minute. On the practice run, you won $1 million.
Did.
That but morning. That was a practice run.
That
they
was
said,
a practice
run. They said, this
now,
doesn't
Doc,
count.
You know, I knew I did not have a snowball's chance.
Okay.
No way.
Okay.
So my mom was there in her little wheelchair, and my little cousin was there. And that afternoon, when we did it again, I was back in the same place. You know, you pick this one or this one. Well, that morning I had picked the bottom one.
Yeah.
You know, this is the state. They've moved there.
They've moved it. Okay.
Sure enough, I took the top one. I won $1 million.
You won $1 million.
I did.
And then what happens to a lottery winner? What happens?
Well,
besides Doc, everybody knocking on your door for money.
Well, they do that, Doc. People wanted everything from a mobile operation to clean houses.
Okay.
To evangelists wanting me to pay off their debt.
Okay.
Well, I'm tight.
Yeah, okay.
And I grew up and I started to work when I was 14 years old. And again, I will reiterate, I'm tight. My mom was sick and I was taking care of her. Excuse me. And I said, one thing I'm going to do is take care of my mom.
Right.
I'll put the money aside. If I need it, I'll have it.
But you put it aside.
I put it aside.
Would you go to a bank with a million-dollar check?
No. Oh, heavens, no. I've got the best friend that's a banker in the state of Tennessee, Jim Ayers.
Yes.
I called him at home, and I said, you don't know where I could find a good banker, do you? And he said, we'll take care of you, baby. So that's Jim Ayers walks on water.
Right.
He's an honest man. And I put it in CDs.
Okay.
And I still have it all except what the government took. They took $350-something thousand.
So they took about a third of it.
They did. But now, I did not spend it or waste it. I did not. Someone called and they said, are you going to build a swimming pool? I said, why? They said, well, are y'all going to move? I said, why? I said, do you realize $1 million won't last long if you start blowing it? And I said, and I'm going to keep this money to take care of my mom. And if I don't need it, I'm not going to spend it. And that's basically what I did. I squirreled it away, Doc, and I've still got it.
That's great. And it's collecting interest.
Of course. I didn't buy any wild stocks with it or anything like that. Just put it aside. I think that's what you're supposed to do. If you've worked all your life and earned your money and knew what bills you had to pay and what you had to do with your money, you're conservative.
Did you just go to work the next day and continue to live your life?
I won my money on Saturday, and I called Mark Davis, and he said, I called him, and he was doing some handiwork at home that night, and he said, yes, you won, didn't you? I said, I did. He said, are you going to quit? I said, I'll be there Monday. He said, well, what about Tuesday? I said, until y'all fire me, I'll be there.
Isn't that great? That is great.
Well, I guess the moral of the story is you're not going to win it again, and you better be conservative and save what you got.
Right.
That was a gift, but I thought it was a sign.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did the best thing with it. You had it as an insurance policy.
And besides that, my job, I loved it. They spoil me rotten.
Good.
I earned good money. I didn't need to go blow that.
Well, you know, you've got this unique perspective on Republican, Democrat. Tell us about what you think our state government, what do you think they're doing right and what are they doing wrong? And what do you see they're doing?
Well, I'm probably not supposed to, but since it's just me and you talking here. I was really disappointed with our state elected officials when it come to the convention. You know, we the people of Tennessee picked Donald Trump. 90 plus counties, I think he lost one county. And then our governor never saw fit to vote for him. So to me, the governor let the people of Tennessee down because he let his personal choice override what the people wanted.
Okay.
And I think as far as our senators and our state reps, they are up there trying to do some really good things this session.
Well, I know you stay in close touch with them, everything they're doing. What do you see their big push is for this session?
Well, they're just really getting their feet wet right now. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you that, but I can tell you that I'm fortunate enough that I've had a couple of little lunches with them. And I'm watching, and I'm available if need be during the next election.
Right.
If we can't get some of the bills through that's beneficial to the people of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. I think they had maybe 2 weeks ago, week and a half ago, it was about the bathroom bill.
Right.
That was a waste of our time and their money.
And hasn't President Trump...
He stopped it. Oh, yes.
He stopped that.
You know, I wake up every morning knowing that Donald Trump, President Trump, is there to take care of us. And I never thought prior to Obama getting elected that I would be afraid of what a president can do. Because I grew up thinking your presidents are there to take care of you. If Hillary Clinton, and I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about this or not, but my gut feeling is if Hillary Clinton had got elected, we would not have any borders. And they were letting in refugees. I'm not against refugees. I'm not against immigrants. I am against these people coming in. We know who they are. We need to know who they are. Everybody can come in legally.
Right.
Do your paperwork. Right. Let's do some background. And then come in.
But illegal immigration.
No. And Hillary Clinton said during her campaign, you heard her say that she and Bill left there broke, dead broke, when they left the White House. How can somebody leave the White House dead broke and be worth $250 million? Quarter of a billion now. You had to sell something. They didn't have anything to sell but us.
That's true.
That's my opinion of, you asked me why I was a Republican and why I was for Donald Trump, because I paid attention to what she was saying. I mean, I was a delegate, and, you know, I was listening to see if she had anything to say that she was going to change from what Obama had done.
Right.
But there was nothing there.
Well, you know, let's shift a little bit, because what we find is there are a lot of people supporting Donald Trump. There's a lot of news not supporting Donald Trump. What do you see what's happening with Donald Trump and the Republican Party? Some of the Republicans are pushing against him. Where do you see it?
Well, this is just you and me talking again. I think John McCain is envious that Donald Trump won. Okay. And this is sour grapes. I think Lindsey Graham needs to go home. If you didn't get 1%, you weren't qualified then, and you're not qualified now to tell us what to do. And what do I see? I see that Donald Trump can't be bought, and he may be a little strong-willed. I'll give you that. But thank God that he is, because he can't be bought. He sort of is listening to the people out there, what they were saying, and he's asking their advice on what they were saying. The news media was against him. Hey, you can just look at election night. They all fell apart.
Well, they were against him, and they seemed to continue.
And I am so thankful he knows Twitter. I get up every morning at 5 o'clock to see what our president is talking to me about, and it not being filtered through Joe Scarborough or Fox News.
That's really interesting, because on his Twitter, he has, what, 20 million people or 30 million people following him?
Yeah.
But why do people, and I've heard this before, say, I feel like he's talking to me?
Because he is talking to us. He's talking to us, and it's not being filtered. Speaking of him talking to us, I went to the inauguration.
That's another one. You got to go.
I did. Okay. I am so thankful. Lamar Alexander's William Campbell was so nice to me. I got to go to the inauguration. And the day of the inauguration, you know, we have our little have to stand for a while, and I got to know – Doc, I'll talk to a tree if they'll talk back to me. I like to get to know people. So we were standing in this little group of people. There were some ladies there from Palm Beach, Florida, by me. And then they were on those little sticks that you sit, you know, like you do if you're at a horse race or whatever. And they were they were comical, but they were really nice. And then this other guy that was standing beside me was from Birmingham, Alabama. He was in healthcare. Home health was one of his things, and he was a doctor. And then the guy behind me was from Louisiana, and he was in the legal field. He was a lawyer. So we're listening to Donald Trump talk, and I got sort of emotional, and tears were running. I said, "Get it together, Ann. These people are going to think you're nuts." And so I sort of took a deep breath and sucked it up. And what is it they say? Suck it up, buttercup.
Right. Yeah.
So I took a deep breath, and when he turned around, the doctor, when he turned around after hearing the speech, my tears were met with tears. He had tears rolling down his face also. And the guy who was the professional legal behind me had tears rolling down his face, and his wife. So, you know, Donald Trump is talking to us.
Yeah, he is. The thing about it, though, the Republican Party seems to embrace a little bit, but then not embrace everything. Do you think that the party, you know, the elite, the establishment, do you think they've abandoned us?
Yes. How about that for a good answer?
Well, and do you think they, how do they feel about it? Do they look down on us?
Yes.
Or do they just negate us?
It's sort of like, and I know there was a lot of people out there for Bush and Rubio, but they were the hand-chosen candidates because they could be manipulated. They were the money people of the politicians, just sort of like Romney, but he did come around after the election was over, and he wanted something.
Right. But, if the Republican Party, the establishment, is taking that view of people like you and me and families like ours, What? How do you think we're going to be able to attract young people into the Republican Party?
Young people are going to be the Republican Party, and they're going to be people that are our Twitter accounts and our Facebook accounts. What they're the older people, the establishment, our newspapers and few talk shows. Mm-hmm. That's not going to do it anymore.
So it's got to be social media.
It's got to be social media, online. Twitter. Yes. Do you not know that's exactly how I feel that Trump won it? His son-in-law, Jared, was social media. They used social media. They didn't have to have 3,000 people heading up something. They used accounts.
Okay. And you know, it's very, very effective. What do you think we should do as a Republican Party to attract these young people? I mean, yes, they're on social media. How do we talk to them?
Talk to them, not at them. And that's what so many politicians come in and tell you what they think you want to hear. But most young people are just like you and me and everybody else. They want to be treated like their vote counts, like their opinion counts. And I think that's what Donald Trump has done. He has sat down with the kids, the adults, the people that's been forgotten and left behind, our veterans. He's talked to them. He's assured the elderly that we're not going to do away with Social Security and they're not going to be left behind. You know, if we can take care, this is maybe too much, but we'll try it and see. If we can take care of all the immigrants, immigrants that are coming in here, if we, and some of them are Muslims, if we can give them housing and money, and if we can take care of their medical bills, and we can send their kids to school, we need to stop and look at what we've got in America, of our American citizens that are on poverty, in shelters, and doing without. Why would we bring in somebody and house and take care of them when we've got people in the United States that are suffering? I think we need to take care of our own people first that are here. And I'm not knocking immigrants because I have some fantastic friends that are Hispanic. And I'm not knocking that we don't need to take care of people, but you need to come in here legally.
And take care of Wilson.
And if they want to come in here illegally, they do not never need to apply to and try to vote. They do not need to apply for benefits, and we do not give them free anything.
Okay. The Republican Party bringing people in.
Yes.
We just need to espouse our principles.
Yes.
And talk.
Yes.
With them.
Yes.
Not at them.
Yes.
And what else would you suggest that happened in the Republican Party? We've got the House, we've got the Senate, we've got the presidency. What do you think? I mean, the town halls I see, everybody's up in arms about health care. You've been in the health care industry. How should we fix this?
Well, I'm just a peon there. I do know that the health care industry is really not as bad as what they say, but you cannot mandate a doctor or a health care facility to document all day long and not give them the funds that it's costing three nurses where you would normally need one nurse to take care of a patient. You got three nurses doing paperwork.
And you've seen that in the facility.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We have wonderful facilities, but I'm going to tell you, in your skill units and all, if it's not documented, the state and the feds consider it not done. And it, you know, what time you're sitting there documenting, you could be in there changing a bandage or taking a pressure or giving a pill or giving aid and comfort to someone that needs you that day. But no, you've got paperwork to do for the government.
And that's become the norm. And
I know.
People are, and that raises
there's
the cost
just not
of
many. There's not many doctors like you that care, that really care, and you care. My Dr. Kelly here in Memphis, B.J. Kelly, he was my mom's doctor for 17 years, phone call away. But he cares about his patients.
He's
DaVita. But he cares about his patients. And there's not many of those. And the reason they're not is because the government is weeding them out because they are tired of the paperwork.
Yeah, they are. They are. And they're just making more and more paperwork for everyone. And I'm not sure it goes anywhere.
True. I got a friend, Doc, you were talking about the government. I do a lot of free work. I call myself a little red tape cutter because I've been there so long in my lifetime doing the networking.
Right.
Networking. And I got a friend that's a farmer trying to find out about the drought monitor.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to, do you know, even for me, which I think I can reach out and talk to somebody, I never found out where the drought monitor and who handles it. They kept giving me a name, and I said, that is not right. They said, why? I said, because he's an Obama man, and he left in December.
So he's not there.
He's not there. Obama gave him a bonus check, so I was told. And they just pretty much left the offices.
Take a deep breath and just, I think this will all be straightened out.
I think our president, when he gets his people in line, I already feel safer with Mad Dog Mattis there. You know, I think when he gets his people in line, Jeff Sessions is a blessing.
Okay.
I think we need to get behind the police and support them. It's not a black lives, blue lives, green lives matter. All lives matter. But law and order should be the priority.
Right. And that's a priority he's made.
He has. He has. And I think he's made a commitment. And I think he's made a commitment to our military people.
Yeah, that's great. I'm George Flynn. My guest has been Ann Strong. She's from Crockett County. And she was a Democrat. Now she's a Republican.
Absolutely. And
I born again Republican.
And I love Dr. Flynn because he helped walk me through the process. He educated me.
We appreciate you watching In Depth TV, and we'll see you next time.